Hi everyone, welcome to the Real Estate Funds Podcast. Today we have a very special guest, Richard Wilson, the founder of the Family Office Club. He runs an investor community with over 14 million members across social media platforms, mainly LinkedIn. He is the host of the number one ultra wealthy investor club and has hosted 275 in-person events around the country. He's interviewed 40 billionaires and he's written 13 books, went to Harvard. Richard, is there anything you don't do?
Well, I don't do most things. I think that's one thing I try to communicate. When we were starting this interview, my video wasn't working because I still had my camera up. And the video I was just recording was on extreme focus and how you can only do a few things to the extreme. And if you try to do everything at an extreme level, it's just not going to work, right? So importantly, there's most things I don't do.
For sure. Yeah, so give us the rundown of the types of people that you help and the services you provide with the Family Office Club.
Yeah, sure. So this morning I had a phone call with a $200 million net worth family. It's a manufacturing family. The daughters are taking over within the family. They're trying to figure out how to create a virtual family office, how do they invest their capital, et cetera. I also had a cold reach out from a billionaire's family office for one of the billionaires.com interviews. And a lot of what we do is just spread best practices. And, you know, we've had 2,000 investors on stage at our events over time, and they're always sharing structures, strategies, mental models. And so a lot of it is just kind of making it so our investor club is a perpetual learning machine, just like your podcast. And this book I just finished reading yesterday, it's Warren Buffett's annual shareholder letters from the last 50 years. And it's an amazing book. Definitely recommend people pick that up. It's not available on Audible. And so we see our investor club as this kind of gusher of best practices among the ultra wealthy. And then we're always just trying to implement what the ultra wealthy are doing ourselves to help them either start their family office or meet other families or potential opportunities in our club.
Gotcha. Yeah. So you have some different opportunities. You know, you help family offices, you increase deal flow, help people raise capital like real estate operators, you know, venture capital, private equity. So going into capital raising a little bit, what are some of the recommendations you have there and the top tips?
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is like the more I study people who are extremely successful and work with them, you know, we've gotten over 24 deals done with billionaires to date. It becomes very obvious that the people who get extreme success, they don't do what everyone else does. They reject what the herd is doing. They don't do things at an average level or just at best, you'll get really good at being average. So doing things that are really unique is important. If somebody's raising capital, especially if you don't have much experience or track record yet, it's even more important to be unique and be more focused than everybody else or focus on a niche that almost nobody else is focused on or be way ahead of the curve. So when the herd catches up with you, you're positioned as number one in front of the herd. That's one of the most important things. And investors want to see that too. Investors aren't excited to look at a pitch that looks like everybody else's. Maybe some golf club investor that sees four deals a year will invest with you if you look like everyone else. But you could throw a loaf of bread at any investment event and hit three multifamily syndicators upside the head. And that is the reason why, especially if you're in multifamily, you have to be super specialized. Or I think it's hard to make progress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you think you have to be on the operator side? Like you have to be an operator, or what if you're an individual just wanting to raise capital?
I don't think you have to be an operator. If you're an individual, your super skill could be that you're really good at connecting with investors in La Jolla and San Diego, or your super skill could be raising capital from a demographic like doctors anywhere in the world or doctors anywhere in the state of Texas. It could be that you have a way of conducting due diligence on deals or structuring deals. That's your superpower. So the legal structure could be your advantage. I think there is an advantage when somebody meets somebody and they are the founder of the company that you're raising capital for. You can answer every question on the fly. You don't have to go back and ask somebody for the answer. There is an advantage in that, for sure. But you don't have to be. We know people that have raised hundreds of millions of dollars or even next week at one of our events, we have someone who's raised over $7 billion for other people's investment ventures, not for their own firm. So they're a good case study of that.
And how would you find those partners to raise capital with?
Some of them go by, a term such as a placement agent or a third-party marketer, et cetera. The reality is once somebody has raised a couple $100 million or even $100 million, like the world is their oyster and everyone wants to have them help them raise capital. So they'll typically go up the food chain and eventually either get equity partnership in a firm that needs to raise capital, or they'll only raise capital for someone who has 300, 500, or $1 billion of AUM, because it's just easier to raise capital for someone with a track record that seemingly has very little operational risk. To find people who are really good at raising capital and aren't yet kind of married up with a big, gigantic firm, I would recommend finding someone with a lot of experience and offering them equity partnership, not just as a thin veil for not going a broker-dealer capital raising route in terms of regulations, but to really be a true partner, because they probably learned about vetting deals. They probably could help with structuring deals. They could help oversee decisions, but also bring capital into the partnership. It's probably the best way to recruit them once you've de-risked whether they're real or not.
Gotcha. Yeah, so you could do equity, maybe do a brokerage, like a percentage fee first. And then once you get to know the person and your partners, I know some people that have quote unquote dated for, just a few deals, and then later they partnered once they saw the
Right.
deals went full cycle,
Yeah, there's a
and they
lot of
got some deals.
regulations around it. Like if you're not careful, you could say, oh, well, lots of people do this and just do it. And some people will get away with it. But there's a lot of regulations around what you pay for a fee if they're not broker-dealer licensed. So just be aware that just because other people do things a certain way may or may not mean that the regulations are crystal clear on that being a way that won't potentially get you in trouble. So it's just something for people new to the space to be aware of and just kind of watching out for.
Yeah, and tell us how you help capital raisers with pitchdecks.com.
Yeah, sure. So we've got a number of resources to help people raising capital. I mean, first and foremost, most people that end up spending time with us in our investor club, they really de-risk their time by looking at our Family Office Club YouTube channel. We have coming up on 1,000 videos there. And obviously, it's free because it's YouTube. And on pitchdecks.com, we're helping people with materials, putting together the materials and advice and feedback and insights there. A lot of that comes out at our masterminds and our live events. And then at capitalraising.com, we've got our free book on raising capital. I think you've read that one. And it provides like a six-step system to raising capital systematically and kind of attracting capital instead of like chasing or cold calling or reaching out all the time to raise capital.
For sure. Yeah, and you put out a lot of thought leadership, which I've heard you speak about, and it seems to be one of the best ways to attract capital, and like you said, not chasing people down. What are your thoughts on thought leadership, and how can you create the best content?
Yeah, I think it's hard to be number one in a niche if the niche is really crowded. Like if you want to be number one stock market expert, it's like almost impossible these days. If you want to be number one on penny stocks, it's also really hard. So you have to find a little niche, whether it's like manufacturing tech or real estate tech, or instead of self-storage, it'd be like cold storage or cold storage in Texas or something, right? And so I think that is critical to choose the right sandbox, because otherwise it'll be defeating to put out a lot of content. Seemingly nobody cares. If you're in an area of growing demand and interest, that helps a lot. If it's an area that you're really long-term committed to, that's almost required. Everybody has the same excuse. I'm not a natural writer. I'm not a natural public speaker. I don't have time for this. That's not my strength. Everybody says these same things, and that's why nobody does thought leadership pretty much. But what takes all those excuses off the table is if you find a sandbox that's so valuable that if you could ever be number one or two or three in that sandbox, the rewards would be ridiculous for getting there. That's what's motivated me over 17 years to grow Family Office Club. And then now, starting 2 years ago, I bought billionaires.com and I'm interviewing 100 billionaires. I've read 95 out of the 240 billionaire books. And we're going to make billionaires.com the number one resource globally on billionaire strategies and mental models. So it competes with the legacy of Napoleon Hill in terms of what he documented without disclosing the names mostly of who he got the information from. And that is an example of me choosing a sandbox where if we can meet that goal, then the results will be unknown, but they will be exponential on what it will do for our business and our balance sheet and for our club members. And so that's kind of me kind of sharing it, not as a theory, but something that I use for myself to motivate myself, like to still put out more thought leadership after all this time.
Yeah, and it seems like when you started, you started with hedge funds and you tried different niches out before you found the family office space and then just doubled down on that. And then once you scaled that, obviously you've had people come to you and deals come to you. So transitioning to now deal flow, how can, capital raisers, family offices increase their deal flow?
Yeah, great question. At our mastermind next week, I only have time to show so many slides, and we have one whole section of the event on how to maximize deal flow. And there's one process that's like the most powerful thing I've found in 17 years. This is something that every billion-dollar plus private equity firm does, but it only costs $5,000 a year, and nobody I know does it who's worth less than $100 million. And everybody who uses it, I think, will get great results from this. So basically, you identify what your strike zone is, whatever the niche is. It could be stem cells, it could be storage, multifamily, whatever. But just as an example, let's say it is storage and you like Arizona. Then you say, okay, well, we don't want to go after institutional storage assets because if they're too big, all the institutions have already bought them all and the valuations are too high. So let's go down a notch from that. And we don't want anything too tiny. So we're not going to look at 20 unit storage unit places. We need at least 100 or 50 or whatever it is that is your qualifier. And you identify that strike zone. Then you see in the state of Arizona, by using a, $5 or $8 or $10 an hour person in the Philippines, who will work 40 hours a week, for very little cost. And we've had a great success with people over there helping us scale. They'll create a database or a universe, and you identify 30 to 300 target pieces of deal flow in the universe that you could acquire, and then find the person who runs the storage location and their email, their LinkedIn profile, their phone number. You script a sentence and a half about why it would be smart for them to meet with you about investing or acquiring or partnering on their asset. And hopefully how you're already down the path that they're trying to do, scale and have an exit, et cetera. And then you have that email systematically sent out again by your Filipino assistant or someone on your team if you're too busy to do it. And you reach out and you work that list. Most people are not that methodical. They're not that focused. They're not clear in their strike zone. They won't follow up again and again. I followed up 14 times to get Mark Cuban to answer my three questions for billionaires.com. Most people might give up after 10 or 12 times. And I think he figured I was going to be politely persistent until he answered me. So eventually he just did. And I really appreciated it. So it
Yeah, and that's
cost
the
me,
same thing with billionaires.com. How many years was that? 14 years?
It took 12 years to buy it,
12 years.
12 years of negotiating. I followed up every 3 months until they caved on the price and gave it to me. But like the main point is like all of what I just talked about might cost you like $5,000 a year of people helping you do that. And every private equity firm at $1 billion plus does it. Why don't smaller private equity firms do it? Because they don't know the process, or they think they need a full-time team to pull it off, and they don't. And the assets you're going after are much smaller than the PE guys. So it doesn't matter that they're doing it because they think your assets are a big waste of their time. When you bundle all your assets up, you could sell it to PE. But what we're looking at, normal investment families, like we're not looking at 10 million plus EBITDA companies. We're looking at 2 million EBITDA or 1 million or half a million or 3 million, right? So that's the important point that people don't think like, oh, that strategy is not for me. That's what everyone thinks, just like writing a book. If everyone did it, it wouldn't be helpful,
Gotcha. So it's mainly outreach then for finding deals. It's not really, I think thought leadership would be more on the capital raising side, and then deal flow is more outreach. Do you agree with that?
Well, I love talking about positioning, and I've gone through Dan Sullivan's Unique Ability 2.0 workbook, which is pure gold, super powerful. And my unique ability is crafting a position that systematically creates leads over and over again that are pre-qualified to do business with us. So I am a huge fan of if your family sold their business in the auto parts industry and you want to now invest in that industry again, then your family office should be called Auto Parts Strategic Capital or something like that, right? And you should attract deal flow, and you should speak at auto part association events that cost $10,000 for membership or $7,500, et cetera. And you can attract massive deal flow through positioning and thought leadership. Most people don't want to hear that, and they're not good at branding. Most family offices want to be more private than that, so they're scared about implementing that idea. But that can also be massively powerful. And your point of thought leadership can help you attract deal flow and attract capital is very much valid. I would do all the above. If you want to be really successful in a niche, you need to do many different things to stand out. And just before you hit record, you were talking about that, right? Speed of implementation, trying stuff, experimenting, dropping what doesn't work. I mean, that's how everyone I know who's successful moves forward.
For sure. Yeah, it's constantly testing, picking,
Yeah.
different things to work on and choosing exactly what works and doubling down on that. So let's talk about LinkedIn, because you've really scaled LinkedIn, have the number one investor community on there. If you were to start over on LinkedIn today, what would you do?
I would first figure out what is that niche position, what's the sandbox that you want to focus on. I would try to get down to a sentence, kind of what your offering is or what your position is in that sandbox that's unique from what other people are offering. And then I have a formula I got from Jeffrey Gitomer that changed my life. And he said that if you put out content that's helpful, the people that could say yes to you for whatever your sandbox and that one-liner is, and you put out content every day, or he says every week, so you could do it every week, but I would personally do it every day in some small way, then you'll be a local expert in 1 or 2 years, a national expert in 3 or 4 years, and a global expert in 7 years. And when he told me that formula, I didn't know what a family office was yet, but I said, oh, I'm going to do that, because he just told me that most people don't follow his advice and they ignore it, just like the deal flow strategy I just gave. Most people just say, ah, that sounds like a lot of work. I'm not going to do that. And so I did that, and that changed my life, focusing on the family office space and giving away the information. But if I had to do it over, I would have more focus from the beginning, because at the beginning, I was focused on family offices and I want the most visited family office website. But then I focused in on single family offices, how to start a family office, sent to millionaires, billionaires, all within the same marketing funnel. But things would have moved faster if I was a little bit more focused at the beginning in terms of the positioning. But you kind of gain that expertise through experimentation. But I would encourage people to have a real crystal clear vision of their sandbox, who they're trying to attract, and then figure out how you can kind of document your journey as you're learning so other people learn along with you within the niche that you're in.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I'm assuming you reach out to people on LinkedIn as well. What does your outreach strategy look like for LinkedIn, as well as email, possibly phone calls?
Sure. I'm anti reach out unless it's like super laser focused. So we have a portfolio of Airbnb properties. We are good at using what's called the OTAs. That are like Airbnb and VRBO and HomeAway, and we're using those to fill some hotels' empty rooms. And so my team will reach out to hotel asset owners and see if they want to work with us in that way. And so they will reach out on LinkedIn because we know they're an asset owner in the niche. And likewise, we've got a database of every billionaire that's known in the world and what we think is their legitimate LinkedIn profile. And I will reach out to billionaires to try to get the interviews completed. But otherwise, we don't do any reach outs really on LinkedIn. We're looking more to attract the leads in. So, like this morning, I put out a note saying that one of my clients that we've done 19 transactions with, he's looking to acquire more dental practices. And so I put out a note saying what we are looking for on LinkedIn. And then we get deal flow in that hopefully matches, what we kind of put out there. That's how usually we source deals, is really just saying what we're doing via YouTube, via LinkedIn, drop notes about what we're interested in when I speak on stage places, and then the deal flow kind of naturally comes in over time as people spend like 900 hours a month watching our YouTube videos. Then someone will hear that like 6 months later and then send us a piece of deal flow.
For sure. Yeah, and I'm assuming when you reach out to billionaires, the message is pretty short. What does it
Oh
look
yeah.
like? And just give us an example message. What does it look like when you're reaching out to these people?
Yeah, for sure. Super short, super concise. Every word matters. In the subject line of the email, the best is to put something so specific to them that email could not possibly have been a template going to anybody else. It could be about the town that the billionaire grew up in. It could be about the fact that I'm an Eagle Scout and the founder of Quicken Loans. It was also a Eagle Scout. So I'll put something about being an Eagle Scout in the subject line. I put our social media account, the 14 million, in the subject line sometimes. And then the email, importantly, I make it as short as possible, and I assure them that I don't need multiple meetings. I don't need a phone call. I just want answers to my three questions I'm asking 100 billionaires. And I give them the chance to reply via email, text message, an audio message, doing a Zoom, or they can come on stage at one of our events. So I'm basically saying, like, hey, this is going to take like 4 minutes of your time. If you can just hit record on your phone and answer these three questions, like Tony Robbins did, then I'll make it and chop it up into a back and forth audio interview. And it'll be an amazing piece of content. It will help so many people. So de-risking the other person's time by adding value first and making it super concise is really critical.
For sure. Yeah. And for the more ultra wealthy families out there that don't have a family office set up, give us an overview of how that process works and how they could set up their own family office.
Sure. Yeah. So basically, when someone's getting started, they need to go through about 40 to 50 questions that if you don't ask yourself, you won't really know what type of family office you're looking to set up. So here at Family Office Club, what we're doing is helping families make sure they ask themselves those 50 questions, or we'll go through it with them, complete a one-page dashboard cheat sheet on all the different components of their family office. And if they can't fill out half of it, that's like some homework areas they need to work on. Many times they need to put core service providers in place, a new wealth advisor or two, figure out their real estate bucket strategy, and then figure out where they're going to play offense in one or two niche areas where they're going to grow their balance sheet the fastest. So the core part of it is like, what are their family values and goals? And then everything else should come from that. And then we try to really explain to them, like, your wealth manager is playing defense for you, your real estate should be making gains, tracking, beating inflation, creating cash flow, usually 20% of its development, 80% cash flowing, in my experience. And then in the operating business, you're the most focused and you're taking the most quote unquote risk, but it's the area you know best, hopefully.
For sure. Yeah, and do you see most family offices invest in real estate? Because that's what our podcast is on, helping real
Yeah.
estate limited partners like family offices, high net worth individuals. How do you see the synergies play out between the real estate operator and then the family office? How can the operator approach the family office, and then how can the family office find the best deals?
Yeah, so real estate's super common, to the point where some people who are raising capital for something not in real estate complain. But I explain to them, if you go to any family office event on planet Earth, it doesn't matter if you made your money in tech or pharmaceuticals. Every family wants some of their money in real estate. It's just kind of the reality. They want some hard assets that are cash flowing. So that's just important to know in case you're frustrated as a VC PE person listening to this podcast. It's just a reality of the space at any event. It doesn't mean that they don't want other things. But when it comes to help working with families and raising capital for real estate, most important thing is just to realize how much competition you have. So make sure you're being unique. Also, if you go up to families and they don't know you, trust you, or understand your focus, they don't really care what your deal says. They don't really care that IRR sounds amazing. If they don't know you and trust you, anyone can put anything on a piece of paper. So if they know that you only buy storage properties, or you only buy data centers, or you only buy industrial real estate, only in the state of Florida, or only in Orlando, and you have got that niche on lockdown in Orlando, and you know every asset owner by first name because you meet with them all the time, and then that adds so much trust and context, they're much more likely to do a deal with you, even if your returns look much worse than what some other people are promising. Because a good example is, like, if you're in the market to buy a Tesla, and you're not sure if you're gonna get Cybertruck or the Model X, and then you're going to the airport to travel to a business conference, and someone comes up to you, says, "Hey, I got a Tesla for sale. You want to buy one?" And you're like, "No, I'm on my way to my airplane gate. Like, who are you? Like, what?" It's like out of context, right? So even if you go to an investment conference, and someone pitches you this random deal, you're kind of like, "Is it a real Tesla? Like, what's wrong with it? You know, are you a dealer? You're not a dealer." Like, it's just the trust is everything. And that's why it's amazing to have someone come to you through thought leadership, because then they already know you and trust you to some level. And that's why your brand name, your one-liner, your positioning, your strategy, as soon as they hear it, they should lean forward and say, "Oh, wow, How could we work together? Wow, I've never heard of anyone doing that before. And it should hit them between the eyes as something that's pretty amazing.
For sure. And what's the number one way that you would approach them? Maybe if you don't have a track record, how would you approach a family office? Would it be a one-liner? Would it be a certain, like how would you word that when you're going up to them?
Yeah, I think the best thing is to have a one-liner for the thing that you are pitching and make sure that's dialed in. If you're not on version 20 of your one-liner, it's probably horrible, just like mine are the first time I write one down. It's clunky and repetitive, et cetera. It doesn't make sense to half the people that hear it, or sounds too much like your competition. That's the first thing. You have to have that ready. But when you're approaching somebody, it's important to listen to what they said on stage or on their LinkedIn profile or their website and think, how do I be helpful to this person first? Is it introducing them to a peer? Is it getting them a client for their core business? Is it hearing what they said on stage and helping their son-in-law or their daughter with an internship, or just somehow making business friends with them in some way, maybe you have something in common, and creating that sense of you added value to them first and you actually listen to them is really important, because a lot of investors get pitched at our events and other places, and people simply say, hey, do you have time for a call? Or do you have time to meet? And they're kind of like, okay, well, what would you like to meet on? And they don't even have that one-liner on themselves, and they make no attempt to add value first. But the best response rates are when I can go to a billionaire and say, hey, you wrote this book. I'd like to buy 500 copies and give it away at my event. Can I talk to someone on your team to do that? And they're like, yeah, sure. Talk to this person. Say, oh, great. Anyway, we can get answers to these three questions. So when we buy the book and give it away, we can share that little interview. My real motivation is just get the interview done. But if I have to buy 500 of their books to get an interview done, like sign me up. I wish every billionaire
It's
had a book. I
huge.
could. And so the other example to make it super clear is when I first moved, I live in Hawaii now, but I used to live in Arizona. And when I moved there, the first week I was there was a service center that had a subscription model. And I said, wow, that's smart. I went to their website. I saw they had like 15 locations. And I was like, oh, that must be a big business. And so I reached out and I said, I have an investment structure that if you wanted to use it, you could raise capital for your transactions and not give up equity and get protect your balance sheet as you scale. And they messaged me back the same day on that cold message. And they're 100 million net worth individuals. And I created that relationship and met them by offering them something versus pitching them something. So I think that's really important to have in your toolkit. Like one strategy is, can I buy 500 of your books? One strategy is, here's an investment structure. One strategy is, here's a client. Here's how I can help you. Here's a resource. And the more you can build those tools, the better life will be in raising capital, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah, so it seems like you have the family office space pretty cornered. You're the number one guy in the space. What are your plans for the future?
I wouldn't say I haven't like cornered, because there's people with different types of expertise, of course, and I'm not so bold to think that, but I appreciate the compliment. But in the future, I see us going deeper in the areas of due diligence on investments to help investors there, next gen content we're doing more on, and then also the billionaire segment. I just think that if you're going to try to learn basketball, figuring out how to hit your free throws from, if Larry Bird had written a book on that, or Michael Jordan or Kobe had recorded things on that, you'd want to first learn from them or an NBA player before you learn from like a Duke University college player. And so documenting all of these mental models and strategies and case studies of what billionaires have done to scale and what the common threads are and the most common statements are between all the billionaires is kind of where we're headed, because that helps the families worth 100 million, but it's also super interesting to the families worth 10 million or so on raising capital who's worth less than 1 million. It's applicable and interesting to all those people. So that's the number one main focus of growth right now. And then we are doing a pro athlete interview series. We've interviewed NBA and NFL athletes. We interviewed Mike Tyson on stage. And that's more about how do you be a top 0.1% performer, kind of outcompete everyone around you and your mental state, and just being a more performance, driven. How do you be top in your space type area, which is just people like meeting the pro athletes at our conferences and stuff too. So it makes it kind of fun.
Absolutely, for sure. Yeah, and what events do you have coming up for in person?
Yeah, so we've got, depending on when you stream this, we've got a couple of masterminds coming up in California and New York. We also have investor summits in October and December, and those are 500 and 700 person events in Brooklyn, and then at the Ritz-Carlton down in South Florida near Miami. But we're doing 16 in-person events per year now moving forward, and our main locations are Hawaii, Beverly Hills, New York City, and South Florida. Those are kind of the hubs. And then over time, we are looking to grow now into Singapore and Sydney, Australia. Now that I'm based in Hawaii, I can get back and forth to Asia much easier. So if anybody has strategic training centers or some strategic way to work together in any of those cities, then definitely let me know. I'm happy to think through how we can work together.
Absolutely. What's the number one way to reach you?
Email's great at richard@investorclub.com, but I also do a lot of text messages and WhatsApp audio messages, and my number on both of those is 305-333-1155.
Awesome. Any last words of wisdom?
I think something I'm just trying to practice right now is kind of what we started out with, is just extreme focus, what's going to move the needle versus what is a relative waste of time, and making sure that I only select a few pressure points on like one big strategic thrust that's really going to grow things exponentially. I think getting that formula right and focusing on the right sandbox, it's all related to thought leadership, raising capital for the right partner or the right project. All these things are connected. So I think that's what I would just kind of reemphasize. And if anyone's curious about what all the billionaires are saying, it's all free at billionaires.com. So there's no need to pay for that. And we try to keep our membership for the Family Office Club pretty affordable, but we are trying to raise the quality over time. So it's only, relatively powerful wealth creators that you're networking with in the room versus startups or people right out of college who have no experience, et cetera,
Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you for coming on, Richard.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you, Weston. Take care.